7. Black Ops Alt. Hashtag Friendly Skies. Over Monument Valley, Utah. January 18th, 2018. 35,000 feet up, Allison Nicodemo wakes from a dream of drowning. She opens her eyes and squints and blinks painfully at the pale blue sky, at the white stratus and cumulus clouds, and at all the shades of terracotta red and brown, ochre, yellow, and sage green that are the desert laid out far below. The cabin of the Beechcraft King Air B-200 is drenched with cold, bright morning sunlight spilling in through 12 circular portholes. Kitty Wells is singing, and there's a smell of coffee and leather upholstery. Allison's throat and mouth are parched, her eyes gummy from the pressurized, recirculated air of the plane, and her tongue feels like the bins of whole-dried fish at the Korean market a few doors down from her shithole apartment back in Los Angeles. Her sinuses ache, and there's a vague, unfamiliar sort of nausea stirring in her belly, a touch of air sickness. She hasn't flown in years. She sits up and stares at her reflection in the window, superimposed on the western sky. She's wearing the new clothes they gave her back at LA Air Force Base, more or less standard-issue agency threads, a black leather blazer, white dress shirt, and black slacks, and a pair of inexpensive-looking black block heel pumps. After she was dressed, the signalman gave her a silver and turquoise bolo tie, and she's wearing that, too. There's a chunky Timex digital watch on her right wrist, so she knows that it's 8:24 a.m., and there's a Glock 17M 9mm tucked snug inside a shoulder holster. Just like the bad old days, and never mind that she hasn't fired a gun since 2011. All around her, the airplane thrums like a gigantic insect that's eaten her alive. It's not a pleasant thought, and she pushes it away. "I need something to drink," she mutters, her voice hardly more than a raw, hoarse whisper, and then she sees the bottle of National Bohemian waiting obligingly in her cup holder. "Well, will you look at that," says the signalman. "Sleeping Beauty awakes, and here I figured you'd be sawing logs all the way to Omaha." He's sitting across the narrow aisle from Ellison and two rows forward, his back to the cockpit doors, facing the female agent who watched on while Ellison endured a rushed medical evaluation and a round of inoculations. Mackenzie, something or another Irish. Rourke? O'Riordan? Riley? Mackenzie Regan, she remembers. Yeah, that's right. She's too pretty, that one. Too young and fresh-faced, entirely too sober and unscarred. Someone who would look more at home teaching elementary school than running with the likes of the signalman. Then again, Allison Nicodemo learned a long time ago just exactly how deceiving looks can truly be. Best to withhold judgment. Always best to wait and see. For all Allison knows, Mackenzie Regan might be the meanest motherfucker alive, a regular intergalactic samurai badass facing the death sentence in 12 star systems, yada, yada, yada. Allison twists the cap off the bottle of beer and takes a long swallow, clears her throat, wipes her mouth on the back of her hand, and belches. Mackenzie Regan turns her head, looking over her shoulder and sparing half a forced distasteful smile, before focusing her attention once more on the documents and photographs and maps spread out on the little table between herself and the signalman. "We just crossed the Arizona-Utah border," he says to Allison, and nods at his window. "Look down there, kiddo, and you'll see the patch of buttes and dust and rattlesnakes that John Ford made famous. If the Duke has a ghost, I'd wager green folding money that's where you'd find him." And then he winks at her and lights a cigarette, which saves Ellison the trouble of having to ask if she can smoke on the flight. "I thought you fucking hated planes," she says, then clears her throat again. "I thought with you it was railways and highways or no ways at all. I thought you'd rather eat the peanuts out of a pile of pig shit than get on an airplane." The signalman watches her and rubs his salt and pepper stubbled chin. It doesn't look as if he's shaved since the day before, or maybe the day before that. "And I thought I'd find you healthy and clean, living it up on the banks of the Vltava," he replies. "You want to tell me again why it is I didn't?" And then to Mackenzie Regan he says, "That's in Prague, the river Vltava," and she sighs and tells him she knew that already. Allison frowns and lets the matter drop. She finds a shiny new Zippo and a half-empty pack of Chesterfields in the breast pocket of the blazer. She lights one and stares at the sky for almost a whole minute before asking, "How long was I out?"
"Not too long," the signalman replies. "Since just before takeoff, an hour and a half, more or less. I warned you that was some potent shit, not like that nickel-and-dime skag you've been shooting."
"Yeah," she mutters around the filter of her cigarette.
"You warned me."
Kitty Wells is replaced by Connie Francis. Who's sorry now? The plane might belong to Albany, but it's sure as shit the signalman's mixtape. Ellison finishes the beer and sets the empty bottle back into the cup holder. She wants to ask if she can get another, and is debating whether or not that's a bad idea, trying to guess just how deep the signalman's indulgence runs, when he holds up a manila folder so she can see, then taps it with an index finger. There's an identical folder lying on the otherwise empty seat next to her, and she nods at him, picks up the folder, and opens it. Inside, there's a thin sheaf of typed pages held together with a red plastic paperclip. "Typed," she notes, "and on onion skin. Not a computer printout, because Albany has never trusted computers for these sorts of things, and likely never will." The cover sheet is stamped with green ink, "Cosmic Top Secret," and "Eyes Only," and so on and so forth. Ellison takes a drag on her Chesterfield, then turns to the second page. And here, assembled in a terse itemized list, are all the many reasons that the agency has sent the signalman to yank her back into the fold, all the horrors and the unlikelihoods that add up to this moment, to her sitting in this seat on this plane, racing through the sky above a cowboy movie landscape of towering sandstone buttes and cowboy movie phantoms.
"I'm going to need another beer for this," Allison says, because really, the worst he can do is say no.
She shuts her eyes, trying to scrape together a few stingy shreds of courage and summon some measure of backbone from the heroine's deceitful warm embrace. When she opens her eyes again, the empty bottle's gone and there's a fresh Natty Bow in the cup holder. It's already been opened for her. The signalman is standing now, stooped slightly so he can gaze out one of the circular windows.
"You don't have to read it all at once," he says. "You've got some time, but I do need you to read all of it, kiddo, and then we'll talk."
Ellison takes a swallow of the cold malt liquor, wipes her mouth, then looks back down at the folder in her lap, the bloody red paperclip, the crisp typed pages, the bizarre catalog of atrocities lined up all neat and tidy for her careful consideration. The life and times and not quite unspeakable sins of a Welsh woman named Jehosheba Talag. The only assignment Ellison Nicodemo never finished, the only one who ever got away.
"To tell you the truth," says the signalman, "after what happened in Atlanta, I thought maybe she'd crawled off somewhere to lick her wounds and whatever. Swum away home like a good polywog to King Neptune's stately pleasure palace or just fucking died. What the fuck ever it is people like her do when they've finally done the world all the mischief they can manage. I honestly thought we'd heard the last of her."
"After what happened in Atlanta." Ellison glances down at the scars on her hands, then shuts her eyes again. "No, you didn't," she says, so softly that the words are almost lost in the low rumbling purr of the King Air's twin turbine engines. "You didn't think that for a minute, so why bother lying to me about it?" When he doesn't answer the question, Ellison opens her eyes and goes back to staring at, but not reading, the contents of the manila folder. It's not like she really expects an answer.
"Anyway," the signalman says finally, "read it. Maybe you'll see some kind of pattern that we're missing. Maybe it'll make more sense to you. We're refueling it off it, then flying on to Quonset Point."
And there's nothing the least bit portentous about making a pit stop at the birthplace of the Enola Gay.
"I stopped thinking like that a long, long time ago," says the signalman. "You have to, or you wind up seeing the face of Jesus in every bowl of breakfast cereal."
"But that's pretty much what you want me to do, isn't it?" she asks him and points at the dossier.
"No, it's not. All I want you to do, But he trails off and sighs and quietly massages his temples and eyelids a moment before continuing. No one ever got as close to her as you did. At least, no one who's still walking around and breathing. Well, I'm not a profiler either, Allison reminds him. Look, I'm not saying I believe you can read that file and tell me what the bitch is going to do next. Just that maybe you'll see something the rest of us have missed. Something. Anything. And the sooner we find her, the sooner we can put this one to bed for good. Before more people die. Before she wakes up something we don't know how to put back to sleep, or blow to smithereens, or banish to whatever shithole Banana Republic dimension she's called it forth from. And, after all, if I hadn't fucked this up 7 years ago, that's not what I said, kiddo. That's not at all what I just said. Listen, as long as the Hound still comes when it's called, that's mostly all they care about. I guess we'll find out, won't we? The signalman sighs and looks away from the window. Just do what you can, he says, and she can hear his exasperation as clearly as she can see the sheen of sweat on his face. She wonders if he'll make it to Offutt without having to use one of the air sickness bags. Just do your best, given the circumstances. When has Albany ever been happy with that? She asks him, and the signalman scowls and goes back to his seat. Mackenzie Regan mutters something Ellison can't quite make out, and the signalman tells her to play nice and mind her own damn business. Ellison starts to ask if times have really gotten so hard that TPTB have started hitting up the steno pool for new talent, but then she thinks better of it. It might bring a smile to her face, poking the bear and all, but then again, it might not, and the folder would still be right there in her lap, lying in wait, ready to snap shut like a steel jaw trap. The plane bumps and shudders for a moment, passing through some invisible wrinkle in the sky, some harmless pocket of clear air turbulence, and Ellison glances over at the signalman. His teeth are clenched, and he's holding on to the armrest for dear life. She imagines she can hear his molars grinding and his stomach rolling. She looks back down at the dossier. She doesn't like seeing him like this. She takes another swallow of beer. Fine, she thinks. I will read these things. Hell, I'll read them twice, three times, but I won't see shit, and pretty soon they'll figure out I'm useless and send me packing. So read the file, get it over with, go the fuck home. The second page of the dossier begins with a brief account of a 32-car pileup on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, just outside of Harrisburg. A 65-foot sperm whale had appeared, ex nihilo, in the westbound lane. The whale had still been alive when first responders arrived on the scene. The plane hits another pocket of rough air, worse than the last, and she glances up at the signalman again. He's doing a piss-poor job of pretending that he's neither ill nor terrified. Ellison finishes her second beer, takes a last drag on her Chesterfield, smoked almost down to the filter, then drops the butt into the empty bottle. She imagines a faint, brief sizzle, even if she doesn't actually hear one. She sets the bottle back in the cup holder before turning her attention once more to the typescript. The unfortunate, impossible sperm whale on I-76. 12 people dead, and so on and so forth. And then a single drop of water falls onto the paper in her lap. More annoyed than surprised, Ellison Nicodemo sits staring at it for 4 or 5 seconds as the ink begins to run, before she looks up to see where it could have come from.